From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The words joy and delight figure prominently in writer Ross Gay's work, and so do moments he spends in his garden and descriptions of his relationship to plants. Now, is that a coincidence that the garden is a main character in his books, books with the titles Inciting Joy and The Book of Delights and the latest, The Book of More Delights? As a longtime gardener who finds both joy and delight in my life outdoors, I don't think so. It's no surprise to me at all that from garlic and sweet potato harvest times and devouring fresh figs from a friend's tree, Ross Gay finds himself positively delighted. I wanted you to meet him and hear about his work and learn what he's up to in his Indiana garden. So more in a moment, but first, this message.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs. Flower bulbs for landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at colorblends.com. Season your spring with Color Blends this fall.
Ross Gay's 4 books of poetry and 3 of essays have won him much praise. He teaches writing at Indiana University in Bloomington, where he also gardens. And I'm so glad he could take time out from both to be here with us today. Hi, Ross. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Ah, you know, it's that time of the season. I don't know.
Yeah.
The harvest time and the cleanup still lies ahead. And oh, boy.
Yeah.
Got to keep going. Yeah. So I should say before we get started that we'll do a book giveaway with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, The Book of More Delights, which is out on September 19th. And we recently did a New York Times column together, which was really fun.
Yes.
So I was so glad to get to meet you. And so since I started reading your books and got to talk to you for that story, I keep thinking of the expression, the Garden of Earthly Delights, you know, that triptych, that painting by Hieronymus Bosch and from like 1500 or something. And, you know, I keep thinking of so much delight. And I don't know what got you started thinking and writing about delight. So tell us just to set the scene a little bit.
You know, it's funny. It's sort of like a longer answer, but I'll try to do it short. One is I have a book called Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude. And that's probably the first book that I wrote while I was, you know, after I had started gardening in a serious way. And I write about the garden. I write about this orchard project that I've been a part of for years and stuff like that. And then after that book came out, I wasn't necessarily thinking about it like this, as I recall. But after that book came out, people started talking to me about it as a sort of a book of joy or a book about joy. And so it made me think and sort of think about like what maybe I haven't quite thought of it like this, but like, what are the definitions of joy that these people maybe are showing me? So I started thinking about like, what is joy and this and that? And, you know, kind of connected to that is this question of delight. And really the Book of Delights, it just came about because I was kind of having a delightful day and I was writing and thinking, oh, I should write a little essay about this delightful day, this delightful moment actually. And very quickly, and I'd like to say like a bird flew my head and said it to me or something, but it occurred that I ought to do it, to write about something that delights me every day for a year. And that's how the Book of Delights came to be. Delight was not a word that I used often, it just like, but something I probably about that it holds the word light inside of it. Anyway, that's sort of how.
Yeah. Okay. Because I think in the preface of the Book of Delights, and what was that, 2022? Is that one?
One came out in 2019.
Inciting Joy is 2022. Okay,
that's right.
So I had it backwards. But I think in the preface of the Book of Delights, you write about how the process of writing those essays, those sort of daily essays that make up the book, occasioned a kind of delight radar, you say. Yeah. And then you say it was like the development of a delight muscle.
Yes.
Which I love. I love that.
Yes. And it's funny. It's nice to be talking to you about it because it's like, I don't think that radar, that muscle develops independent actually of, I mean, it very well could, of course, but like independent for me of being in the garden actually. Cause I was just out in the garden, you know, shortly before we were having this conversation, and I was just like, oh my God. Both like it's an overwhelming place right now,
yes.
But it's such an overwhelming place right now. And the castor beans, which just showed up, are like, I don't know, they might be 12 feet tall. It's like, where am I? You know, this couldn't be Indiana where I am right now.
Oh my. Yeah. So set the scene sort of for us of the garden. You know, what's it like? Is it a backyard? What part of town is it in? You know, where
yeah.
you and your partner, Stephanie, I believe you create yep. this garden together, and how long yep. you've been there, things like that.
Yeah, we've been here at this place for about 6-7 years, and it's we just live in a, you know, in Bloomington, like a little regular city lot. So our lot, I think, is 0.1 acre. So it's a tight garden. But we plant it densely. We have about 5 4-by-8-foot raised beds on what used to be a parking pad, like a gravel parking pad. And then more or less, you know, not entirely garden, but we're pretty damn close, is garden. And we grow, you know, all the greens that we'll eat for, you know, pretty much from about April or May until November, December, maybe. The okra's coming in. The potatoes are doing pretty good. Big garlic harvest. You know, it's beans, growing a lot of beans for drying. It's magical. And then the flowers are doing good. You know, it's this year I just decided to throw a bunch of zinnia seeds out. And they're growing up out of a sweet potato bed.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
My sister has in recent years made a raised bed garden adjacent to her house. She and her husband have it. And she sends me these pictures, and you know, here I am, the like supposedly expert, haha. And, you know, and I'm supposed to give all this, you know, wise advice or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, I look and she's got like, you know, 500 zinnias in the bed with the sweet potatoes, you know, that kind Whoa. Of thing. It's just so much effusion and so much yes. delight, right?
Yes.
And she's so excited. They're both so excited. And that's really what we need to do, is just go ahead and let it take us there, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It feels so lucky to get to have that feeling, you know?
Yeah. And you practice sort of, when we spoke for the Times article, you explained to me that you and Stephanie practice kind of polyculture. You combine different things. And I think you at least roughly follow the biodynamic calendar, the Stella Natura mm-hmm. calendar. So tell us a little bit about those practices or whatever, how they relate to your garden.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just, because I need to dig up some potatoes. And I was just looking today, the root day, I think, just passed on that.
The root day.
Yeah, yes. I think it just passed. Yeah, Stephanie introduced me to that whole biodynamic thing. And so we go by that calendar pretty much, pretty, you know, not 100%, but pretty close. And we grow to the extent that it's possible. We always grow in sort of, you know, kind of thick polyculture, you know, like I said, the sweet potatoes in one of these sweet potato beds is sweet potatoes, zinnias, peppers coming out of it. And what else? Oh, a bunch of Thai basils coming out of it.
Mm.
So in a fairly, I mean, the bed is probably, we just put this bed together. Actually, it's probably about an 8-by-8-foot bed, but it's densely packed. It's packed with stuff. And I think one of the things that maybe you get to learn by having a less space in a certain kind of way in a garden is how to put more stuff together. And then for me, like what I learned is that you kind of learn what likes to grow together, and then you learn what grows well and keeps the weeds away, and you learn what grows well and like brings the birds nearby and this and that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you watch, you learn. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, if
yes.
you watch, you learn.
Yeah. And so with the biodynamic calendar, you said like a root day, and I think they divide the plants up into what, 4 groups, like root, yeah. plants, flower plants, leaf plants, and
yeah.
I forget what other plants.
Fruit plants,
sorry.
Yeah.
And so like you work with a particular one of those plants on the day of, whether it's planting it or harvesting it or whatever. If it's yeah. a root crop, you work with it on a root day and so forth.
Yeah.
yeah. Like having to do with the phases of the moon, I believe, correct?
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so the planetary forces that would impact the growing of the plants.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. Right. It's a beautiful thing. So garlic, you mentioned garlic, and And the photographs you shared with me for the Time story, I was like, wait a minute, is he a garlic farm? Is he operating a garlic farm there? Because he's got a lot of garlic.
We do a lot of garlic. I know. And you actually, I don't know if you remember, but you kind of, because I'm, you know, like gardening, one of the lovely things about gardening to me also is that you kind of made a joke about like your sister thinking you're like the expert. You're never done learning, you know, and you're always sort of in need. And like, you know, we grow a lot of garlic, but we're always trying to get better at storing it. And I don't know if you remember, but you were sort of giving me tips on how you store your garlic. But yeah, we grow a lot of garlic. I love garlic. I love planting it. I love that you put it in and then you kind of come back to it in 7 months or whatever. It's lovely to me.
Yes, it is. It is. It's, and you end up with your own strain, sort of, if you say, so that you're in a way creating a locally adapted, because these are living organisms, of course, that, you know, adapt to the place they're growing over many generations. And, you know, so if all goes well, you have the locally adapted selection of that garlic, which is especially for me, I just love all that. The fact that, you know, it's alive and responding to our time together, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
One of the things that excites me so much, you know, I feel like the longer I garden, the more I sort of, you know, I try to make things easier. And one of the things that gets easier is like certain things volunteer. Certain things like to volunteer. They like to plant themselves. And I'm like, oh, those are the seeds that, you know, they're not the only seeds I'm going to plant, but those are the seeds that are telling me something about wanting to come back.
Yes.
You know?
I used to tease about, in my writing years ago, I could see the path from where this particular plant called Perilla, you know, it's shiso and used in like to make the pickle, the pink ginger, the ginger pickled pink, you know, use a purple shiso leaf. And so I had that growing and it's a prodigious self-sower. Yeah. And I would always tease that you could see my path that I took when I pulled up the Perilla or cut back the Perilla. The path to the compost heap, because it was like littered with baby Perilla seedlings every year. It was like, you know, the way you see where a path a dog takes when you could tell Margaret's path by the Perilla seedlings.
I love it. That's great.
You know, I was sowing them all the way along the path. Yeah. Accidentally.
Yeah.
So, you know, your books are about gardening, but the garden and its plants, they're not about gardening is what I mean to say. They're not about gardening, but they're loaded with the garden and its plants and other living organisms like infuse the books. And then all kinds of other things that delight you and delighted me, like reading about lyrics of your favorite songs, some of which I share, and riding your bicycle and all kinds of other parts of your life, you know. Yeah. But and I hear a lot in the books about gratitude too. Mm-hmm. Besides delight and joy, I hear a lot of thank yous. And I think the new book, The Book of More Delights, and I've said this to you before, it's a little bit like, it feels like a gratitude practice in some ways, that some thread of it does, not to get all Buddhist on you or anything, but all, but it's like, it's, you're often thanking things, the neighbor who has the figs for the delicious fig and the magnolia for its branches it kept you shaded in a hot day. And, you know, there's a lot of thanking. So what about that? Is that something that you find yourself conscious of? Because I know in the garden, I definitely do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I feel like, I feel like one of the gifts, and, you know, it's a lesson and it's a gift that the garden gives us, if we allow it, is that we kind of get to submit to the garden. We get to ask questions. We get to sort of wonder about it and with the garden. And we also get to sort of be in profound need, you know, just like sort of bottomless, unfathomable need, actually. And I feel that feels like a really important state of being, to understand that we do not exist without, like, you know, say the sun, you know, that's one of those things that,
there you go.
It's a big deal, you know, and your plants kind of let you know that. And like, they let you know, like, oh yeah, water is a big deal, everyone, you know, water is a big deal, you know, and on and on and on. It's just like being in a garden for me lets me practice this thing of like witnessing, like everything that's provided is provided.
Yeah.
You know?
In one of the books, there's a essay about mulberries, picking mulberries, needing mulberries, and And what you just said sort of reminded me of it in the sense that it, the act of doing that reminded you of your connection, your almost your animalness, our yes. animalness, right? Yeah. So tell us yeah. about that, like the mulberry tree full of fruit, like what that
yes.
brings up in you.
Yeah, you know, there's two things in that little essay. One is that it was a sweet realization that my father's, his birthday was June 13th, and that where I've lived, which is either outside of Philadelphia or here in Indiana, that's the same time that mulberries are ripe, which is kind of a nice thing to get some mulberries and be reminded that, oh yeah, it's your dad's birthday. You know, my dad died 18 years ago or so. Uh-huh. And, but the other thing is that when I recently was picking mulberries, I was sort of thinking, oh yeah, you know, so many things love mulberries. You know, it's just like I've heard mulberries called a trap crop because birds will prefer the mulberries to the blueberries and the, you know, and,
yes.
Like other creatures, so many other creatures, as I was thinking about it in this essay, also love mulberries. So it's sort of like a way of sort of not only noticing that other creatures love these things, but also that, oh, we're connected by our love for these things, you know?
Yes. And everybody's got to eat.
Everyone's got to eat. Everyone's got to eat. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that, of course, exasperates me sometimes, I will confess, because certain creatures decide they want to eat what I don't want them to eat.
I know.
Talk about my arrogance. And, right? I'm in charge. This is my place, right? Sure. Like that comes up. And then and that's not a very delightful thought.
Yeah.
So yeah. What do you do about, like, do you have pests? Do you have animal visitors? What about that?
Yeah, we have a guy named Greg the groundhog, who I think he lives under the shed, under the garage, and he might live under there with a cat, actually. This might be a kid's book, but I'm pretty sure that's actually true. And Greg, he'll show up, you know, he can start to show up in the spring, I think. And then I've noticed, like, for instance, sweet potatoes. I'm going hard on sweet potatoes this year. I've noticed that the leaves periodically would be nibbled, and sometimes nibbled hard. And, you know, I start thinking, like, is that Greg, or is that the deer who kind of walk around the neighborhood, popping over the fence? Or so I don't know. You know, I try to make it inconvenient for the deer to come in here, meaning I just, like, leave a bunch of, like, brooms and stuff where they might be able to get in here.
Yeah.
And then for Greg, I'm sort of like, well, I've heard that if you eat some of the sweet potato vines, like, that might actually drive more energy into the roots and make bigger roots. So, you know, there's a lot of sweet potatoes. If there was only one sweet potato plant, I'd probably be a little bit more, you know, thinking harder about it. Mm. But for at this moment, I'm just kind of like, okay, Greg, just don't eat them all.
Greg, huh? I was going to ask you, do you and Stephanie ever harvest any of the sweet potato leaves to eat yourselves? Like almost like a spinach type of, because they're tasty.
Oh, they're delicious. They're delicious. Yeah. Just the other day, I made a little stir fry with long beans and okra and the Thai basil and some of the sweet potato leaves. It was beautiful. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, I had the other day, I looked out the window and there was a great blue heron standing in my backyard, maybe 8 feet from the porch at the edge of, or 10 feet at the edge of my little water garden, eating my friends, the frogs, buffet. And this is where it on, because I'm okay with Greg. Like, sure. I get about what you just said about Greg, but then I go completely crazy. And of course, again, everybody's got to eat. So it's tricky.
Yeah.
So the garden brings up for me the joy and delight that you write so beautifully about. But it also brings up for me this desire to exert control that's not in my control. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah, I think that I feel like that's useful too, to sort of get to witness that impulse or that need, you know. I don't make a living off of my garden. So I can have a certain kind of relationship to it that if I was making a living off of it, I probably wouldn't, you know.
Right. Yeah, I get become very attached to certain of the creatures, even more than certain of the plants. And yeah. You know, and it's like I love the frog boys, as I call them. And, yeah. You know, and to see one of them in his mouth, in this heron's mouth was, you know, it's just, I mean, and I get it, but it just, it made me crazy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mentioned figs before, and, you know, in one of the essays of the book, figs come up a lot. And well, I think you confessed having sort of fig envy, and not to get all Adam and Eve on about it all, but you love them. I'm not sure that you are growing them yourself, but you really love figs, right? Are you growing any? How's that going?
Yeah, I'm growing some. I love them because a friend of mine, one of my best friend's dad, sort of introduced them to me when I was probably 19 years old, and I had not had a fresh fig, and it blew my mind. And so ever since then, you know, I've taken cuttings from his trees, and they're around here, they're here in Bloomington, and it's hard in this area region to get, you kind of have to have pretty perfect setup for them to grow and make fruit. And my setup isn't quite perfect for that. And that's where my fig envy comes from. I do know a handful of people around town who are generous enough to sometimes share their figs with me, who do have a kind of perfect setup. Their figs are on a south-facing wall and they get light all day and this and that. Right. But so anyway, a sweet story is that years ago I was at a reading and a woman in New Jersey, and a woman came up to me and she asked me if I thought she could grow figs in a pot. And I said, yeah, of course, they'll make fruit. And I guess she was under the impression that I was like a fig fig wizard or something. And anyway, she came to a reading about 10 years later, just this last fall. And she showed me a picture of her fig tree in the pot with 100, 200 figs or whatever in it.
No.
I was like, oh, my God. So anyway, after I saw her fig trees, we put a bunch of figs in pots. So now we're going with the pot way.
Yeah, that's why we do it here. People I know up here, including myself, that's how we do it. I mean, I might get 25 figs if I'm lucky on a pretty decent sized, you know, in a huge. I mean, the pot's so big, I have to have a hand cart and another person to move it around. I mean, it's really big. And it goes in the garage all winter. But and it's interesting to see us all experimenting, because figs, there's just something so irresistible about them, and they're so perishable, you really can't buy them as produce too well. I mean, you can, but
they're meant to be in right there. It's pretty magic.
I think it's in the earlier book, in Inciting Joy, there's that word inciting, which I always thought was a negative word, right? Like incite a riot, you know, incite something, you know. And then you also, I think it's in that book, but it may be elsewhere, you use the word entanglement. And entanglements are something else. I think of it as like, ooh, you know, claustrophobia, I'm all tied up, I'm you know, in a place I can't get out of, whatever. But you turn words into beautiful ideas. And I just wanted to ask about that. Like you're able to sort of give them a positive spin somehow, like inciting joy. I wouldn't have put those two words together. How did that happen?
Well, that word inciting, I choose that obviously for intentionally, and partly because when I'm thinking about joy, I'm thinking about our kind of, this is the way I've started to sort of think of a definition for joy, is something like the practice of our entanglement with one another, or the practice of our entanglement, and which might mean something like the ways that we attend to a garden and we sort of witness it, and we acknowledge that we're beholden to the garden. You know, the garden's not beholden to us, but we're beholden and we're connected with the garden, something like that. And I feel like that as an idea, it feels like the equivalent of the kind of the way you were talking about incitement. It feels in a way dangerous to a kind of maybe a mode of thinking that would suggest that we're not connected, or a mode of thinking that would suggest that, you know, we ought to imagine that we could not depend on one another, or a mode of thinking that suggests that we could be quote unquote independent, or that kind of stuff. The incitement feels like, you know, really in a way I sort of feel like, yeah, if we start to share with one another, or we do share with one another, if we sort of attend to the ways that we share to one another and witness them and sing about them and grow them and our care and our belonging to one another, that's a danger in a certain kind of way. Mm-hmm. You know, that feels mm-hmm. like an incitement.
Yeah, in the last minute or two, I was just have to ask you, because you have confessed in at least one of these books to a little issue with seeds, like you like to buy a lot of seeds. how have you done this year? Have you used up all the seeds that you bought, or what's the situation over there?
Yeah, I'm a little in surplus.
Never happened to me.
Mm-mm. I'm sure. Yeah, I got, you know, someone got me. I don't know if it was Baker Creek or someone got me. And I was like, oh, yeah, I got to get a bunch of stuff for the fall. And I got very excited about growing way more stuff than I was going to be able to. More stuff than we have room for. That's I've written in an essay before that I seem to get seeds for like a garden that's like 3 acres big, you know?
Yes.
And but you know, the nice thing about that is that, you know, if you garden, you have friends who garden, most likely. And if you have friends who garden, they're gonna take your seeds.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Well, Roske, I'm always really happy to speak to you. And I've been so enjoying the new book, The Book of More Delights, as I did the previous ones. And thanks for making the time today, really, to talk. I can't wait to share this with my audience. So thank you.
Thank you. Your work means so much to me. I just want to thank you so much.
Good. Thank you. And I'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or Stitcher or Apple Podcasts. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening with joy and delight meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs. Flower bulbs for landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at colorblends.com. Season your spring with Color Blends this fall.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.